The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
It's myself again. My name is Gabe Keller Flores, and I am subbing for Mark because he is sick, unfortunately, but I think he's on the mend. So happy to be here with the brave souls who made it through. Not you. You all haven't had the best of luck this course. But yeah, it's kind of, yeah, I think it's actually appropriate to fare difficult weather to get here. I mean, you know, yeah, it's kind of, it's a symbol of that this is important and we need each other's support, you know. So I appreciate everyone being here. Why don't we open it up, see if people have comments, particularly around this theme of obstacles, what appears to be an obstacle during this sit or during your practice at home, and how that may have shifted, or you know, what strategies did the mind use? How was that? What effect did that have? And any questions from my instructions or just obstacles, things that really do seem like obstacles to mindful awareness, to stable, non-judgmental, continuous mindful awareness. I'm sure there are many, many seeming obstacles. So, and see it as an act of generosity, because it's rare to hear from our, it normalizes our experience to hear other people's direct reports. So who'd like to start?
Hi, I'm Jennifer, and I don't know, it's more of a question that I've been posing myself to myself when I'm meditating, and also simply throughout the day, is what's so bad about the present moment that I keep on running away from it? And I don't have any great enlightened answers. But it's there. I mean, it's like, wow, I really want to. And it's funny because then sometimes, oh, it's just the present moment. It's just this. Okay, cool. But 90% of the time, I'm just horrifically trying to run away from it, you know? So, yeah, that's
Thanks.
It's more of a question.
Yeah, that's a great question for us all to reflect on in our own experience. Yeah. Why is it so hard just to... It's not like we're, yeah, it doesn't seem dangerous in theory to be with our life as it is, you know. Still, you know, it's not like it's not passive, you know. If there's something to be done, we'll be aware of that, and we can be aware while we're doing things. You know, aware while talking, it's a good idea to try to be aware while talking and while listening and all the activities that we have. So I might have a follow-up question. You said you don't really know, but that there's a lot of,
it
doesn't feel like a comfortable place. I'm just wondering if in asking that question, do you have any any other, you know, reflections or answers on, what do you find, or what does the mind find when it is exploring that and it kind of runs away, like, you know, for example, in terms of feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Yeah, any ideas?
Well, for me, I think it's it's fear of going to the dark places. So staying in the monkey mind keeps me going there. And when I say the dark places, it's endless suffering and constant disappointment of life. I'm experiencing, there was a death recently in my family. I mean, it's death and it's dying, and it's just the realization, the like, wow, okay. Like,
but is it endless?
Is it.
That, no.
Well,
that's an interesting, I just noticed that when you said it, and that it's endless. And that's the fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it's endless.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and if we don't, so that, you know, that's just interesting that, I mean, endless disappointment and endless pain and suffering, yeah, that's definitely unworkable. So it makes sense that we would avoid the present moment if we assume that what's there, if we really settle in, is endless pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that makes sense if that's our, but have we actually been brave? You know, and it is an act of courage, I think, to you know, maybe it's finite pain. And what is that like? You know, what is our relationship to that? How does that change the approach? Because, yeah, I mean, I think your general sense is really aligns with mine that, yeah, like, that's why we stay distracted, is because there's an accumulation of a lifetime of running, and running is stressful in and of itself, but if we're distracted, we don't have to feel it. So there's kind of this backlog, and the body really is a recipient for that. So the body doesn't feel comfortable, and so we settle in, and especially if we're new to practice and we hear the marketing around peace and coming through meditation, but a lot of it is that experiencing that backlog, so it's unpleasant. And that's where our relationship to that, we can sort of highlight that, because, yeah, we've all been through difficulties and probably all found in moments resources and resilience that we wouldn't have assumed was there, but sometimes we don't have a choice, you know, we kind of are forced into a difficult situation, and we resist for a while, and we try to avoid, and then at some point, that's just more stressful than just submitting and doing what we have to do. You know, procrastination is kind of a simple, more mundane example of that, but, you know, putting something off, and then, oh, it's just easier to just do it, and then, you know, but we, so this is, you know, a deeply embedded, you know, pattern of basically not wanting to feel what's unpleasant, which is totally understandable. But we don't want to assume that that we know. We can just know that it's a habit, and we can just then be interested. Well, there's these teachings that that are pointing to freedom from unnecessary suffering, not necessarily freedom from difficulty, but and we don't actually really know that experience. You know, we may have experienced it, but we may not have really let it really register. I mean, I remember on a long retreat many years ago, having the clear experience and really letting it register of, I think it was some unpleasant emotion, maybe fear, and calm at the same time. There was calmly knowing that movement, that unpleasant but very alive movement in the body, in the mind. But it was being met with understanding and non-resistance. And that is such a, you know, it changes our mind permanently, it chips away at that certainty that we know what unpleasant experience is, because we mostly only know unpleasant experience with the experience of aversion and resistance. So we don't really know them separate. Not that we can separate them, but we can be interested in our relationship, and it's always gradual. It's relative. Like, you know, what would it be like to be a little bit more relaxed, or a little bit more kind, a little bit more open, a little bit more real, more interested. I mean, that's really, I find the distinction is, there's either, it's either too much and we can't be interested, or it's somewhere along that spectrum where it's kind of on the edge, but we can kind of actually be interested, actually be curious. And so that's always where we're assessing. And it's totally fine to assess that the mind doesn't have the resources, the stability in that moment to be interested. No, it's just a scared animal, and this is just... And so then that's where we practice skillful retreats and have... and turn the mind to something else. And then there we develop some confidence that it's not the only reality. There's also the reality of, for example, the body sitting, which may be agitated, but it doesn't have that endlessness, which is always conceptual. It's just unpleasantness here and now. And so even just being with that can be grounding. So yeah, there's a lot there. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think someone over here has a thought.
My name is John. About a year ago, I took a intro to Zen meditation class at the Zen Center, and it felt like the goal was to master this regimen of sitting a certain way and doing a certain thing and clearing my mind. That may be an unfair interpretation of what they practice. It's just how I experienced
sure.
it. So I've been here about 3 or 4 months coming to Dharma Talks and the short intro course and now this course and reading a book that kind of helped. And I find this so much more freeing and natural, the mindfulness approach, first of all, in just the physical freedom of sitting however I want and maybe even standing and not getting hung up about having the right posture or something like that. Because I couldn't sit for a half an hour on one of those and still get up. but also the thought of staying with the goal being, I'm trying to think of how he phrased it, the continuity of present moment awareness was such an interesting thought for me, to just be able to stay with whatever the thought was, and that was okay, even if it was something pretty negative like sorrow or frustration. And that did not mean that there weren't actions I could take outside of the meditation to maybe improve the situation. But the goal being to just stay with that present moment awareness and let the mind move through it.
Yeah.
Has been a real breakthrough for me, a very different way. They may be the same things. It's just I experience them very differently than what I heard at the Zen Center, you know.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah, it is powerful. And it's so simple. But I think what's powerful about it is what's not there. It's the absence of basically... you could say the absence of certainty or a plan or a stance or an agenda. I mean, this makes sense. It's, you know, we can see that in our relationships. When we show up with a certain plan or agenda for, you know, how the interaction should go, then we're not as nimble. But if we're more open to just who this person is in this moment and how they're showing up, and then things unfold more smoothly. Yeah, and it's amazing how much, in my experience, how much of a yearning there is for that, and how we can go through most of our lives not really touching that. You know, it's, you can use different words like acceptance, but it's that freedom of letting nature be nature. And then, a lot of it, I think, for a lot of us, is freedom from judgment. You know, freedom from, that which can be just that persistent comparing and evaluating. Am I good? Am I bad? Is this good? Is this bad? And always, you know, just that basic animal survival instinct, which isn't just on a physical level, but as psychological beings, we have that inherited evolutionary conditioning, and we haven't really been programmed to be at ease, but to always be on the lookout for danger, or on the lookout for hoarding for the winter, or... And that's kind of just to be tender with that, real with that, to witness that, let that be what it is, that animal nature, and to hold that, but to not have to be so, like, that there's another option. That's sort of what it feels like in those moments for me. And it's really, that's why we use words like freedom and liberation, because it's a happiness that's not... it's a different kind of happiness. That's kind of my experience that I think resonates with what you said. Yeah, Amber. It's Amber, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to be here last week, so I listened to Mark's talk or whatever, that, and I'm going to do a horrible job of paraphrasing this, but... something that struck me, and it came back when, I'm sorry, what was your name again? Jennifer was talking, and I was driving, so I didn't write it down because I was listening to it in the car. And something that really struck me was, I think he was talking about the hindrances a bit in there, if I remember right. And he was saying how we're constantly racing to the next moment. And what hit me was he said, it's almost like this moment isn't worth it. And that really hit me of like, wow, like, I don't know about any of you, but like I have grown children, and if I could go back and live any moment when they were a baby, even if it was just the one sitting on the floor watching Sesame Street, that I'm sure at that moment I was like, oh my God, please move to the next one, which I feel like I spend my whole life doing that. Mm. It was really like, what makes that moment worth it, or the next moment more worth it? And it really just struck a chord with me of like, maybe every moment is worth it. And that's, and so it was just kind of a thing that hit me, and that I feel like whenever I hear the idea that nothing is permanent in Buddhism, a lot of times I go to the really sad stuff of like, oh, my dog's going to pass, I'm going to pass my kids and this experience. And forget that sometimes that's super comforting too, that like that really dark time or that really stressful time or that really boring time, that's going to pass too. But maybe I'll look back and it won't feel like that, and that minute is gone.
It's kind of... This is also why I think we run away from the present moment, because we're really used to our ideas, looking to our ideas and concepts and stories for ground and for meaning. I mean, probably if we asked, you know, all of us here to go around and just share what's important to us, and not as a judgment, but just you know, and or even just in a less in a public way, but just looking at our own minds moment to moment, day to day, where do we really, you know, look for ground? And yeah, it's usually, at least for me, some version of a self agenda, self project, and that can be more skillful, more wholesome, and less wholesome, you know, to, you know, take care of my relationships and all that, and you know, lead a life of non-harming and of generosity, and but things always get messy, and then I get obsessive about how to do that, and that's where I can spend a lot of time. But I think my point was, all of that, it seems really real, and like if I could, you know, that we could get to somewhere solid in there, in that, by thinking about it. But it generally tires us out after some time, and then we switch to something else, or just need a break and get distracted. Yeah, so just that ephemeral nature of the present moment as our real home, as our real refuge, as our real ground. I mean, it's not, if it's any ground, it's constantly falling away, but there's always something here. There's always a present moment. But that's kind of when we look for what's real. So that's kind of unsettling, that ephemeral constantly falling away, constantly being reborn. It's like you take, this is an image from a teacher called, her name is Andrea Fella. But it's like you're taking a step into an abyss, and then the ledge materializes, and then you're taking another step. So that, yeah, that just, that's, I think, another reason why we don't hang out in the present moment, because we're used to thinking that our thoughts about things are where we're going to find ground, and just that this is all we get, this moment, really. The past is a thought now. The future is a thought now. Our feelings about the past are happening now. Feelings about the future are happening now. All of my dreams, if I think about them, are happening now. All of my fears, if I think about them, are happening now. Everything that's happened in the past and its sort of accumulated impact on the body and the mind, they're accessible here and now. They're only real as they're showing up here and now. So it's a very alive place to be. Like you're saying, it's like we're in those moments where we can be in that, we know, there's a sense in the mind where we intuit, this is precious, you could use that word, this is alive, like, and we're less interested in comparing, because we realize there isn't another moment, there just is this moment. And then kind of the specific qualities of the moment are less important, because we realize whatever's going on is what's being known and its nature. And so we can develop beautiful qualities with whatever's going on. And that's kind of a general way of understanding how our minds, I think, reframe where to look for happiness, from the specific content, is it pleasant or unpleasant, to, you know, what does a little bit more of a solid ground, or what does have some more continuity, is the mind and its habits and the qualities that we've cultivated. That's kind of that and so then it's kind of like life can bring it on in a sense when we're you know, in those moments, because we're not looking for anything in particular. We're more looking at what's the mind's relationship to what's going on, and how can it be a basis for learning something we haven't learned, like appreciating the ephemeral nature, and letting that touch our hearts. And it's just amazing how we can not be sensitive to that when it's so obvious in some ways. My grandma passed on Sunday. She was 95, and just how rarely I think about that, that I'll die, and what does that mean for my life? You know, what's really important, basically, given that everything gets let go of, even all our... So, like, and I really saw that. I actually got to see her Saturday night, and I could sort of sense that she was a little more willing, a little more open to letting go, and just a lot more, from my perception, interested in love, just love, like her family being around. And there's not you can't hold on to anything. I mean, even our relationships, you know, she had to let go. We have to say goodbye. But yeah, but the graciousness in how we do that, and just wanting to be there, but also letting go. So yeah, and it's like that every moment, actually. Every moment is that tenuous. And these are reflections that the Buddha encouraged. You know, there's one teaching on this, on mindfulness of death, where he asked his disciples, you know, how do you practice mindfulness of death? And they went, different ones answered, and the first one said, you know, like, every day I remember, you know, this could be my last day. And then the Buddha said, that's okay. And then, so progressively, you know, every time I take a mouthful of food, and only the last two, he sort of said, yeah, you're practicing my teaching. And I think it was, yeah, maybe with every breath, that's a traditional reflection. This could be the last breath. And if that brings up anxiety, then we practice, you know, relaxing. But for some of us who, you know, and it's different, it's different medicine for different people. You know, for some of us, you know, that might actually be really enlivening and just like really, you know, oh yeah, you know, that's true. And what am I doing with my moments? And so that's something we can use skillfully as a reflection. Thanks for bringing that up. Other people have thoughts or? Yeah, thanks.
Hi, I'm Robin. So I have young children at home. And over the past year or so, this is my husband, we've had a lot of struggles with one of our children. And I find myself a lot of the time very frustrated and having a lot of negative emotions in many days and moments, in a lot of moments. And so my struggle is, how do I be in the moment, this negative moment, yet still appreciate how fleeting it is? Because this is, you know, this, I'm never going to have these days back. And so how do I live with this duality of being upset or frustrated, or, you know, have feelings of helplessness or powerlessness, while at the same time being fully aware of, you know, the beauty and the, you know, just the, I can't think of the word, but just how lucky, you know, blessed we are for having these moments, and just trying to process all of these feelings while appreciating, you know, what is immediately before me, and not trying to think, how do I get out of these negative feelings to the next minute? More than likely, the negative feelings will still be there. I mean, they're going to occupy the, you know, however long. But that's been an obstacle for me in being mindful, because it's like embracing all of this negativity yet struggling to be okay with it, I guess, and find the beauty and like be beyond, you know, the negativity into the, you know, the gift that it is.
Mm-hmm. What, do you mind if I ask a follow-up question? Because, yeah, just that intuition you have, like you don't want to miss it. I heard that. And this intuition that there's something beautiful there. Yeah, I just wonder if you could say more, like, what is that exactly? I mean, maybe not exactly, but what, you know, because it sounds difficult. I don't know what the situation is, but yeah, from what you said. And yeah, there we all have difficulties, and they're real difficulties. Like, we have real problems. They're not imaginary. We have real, there's this phrase Mark used recently, the unbearable complexity of being. And I really like that, because it kind of invites a surrender. Like, this isn't a mistake. Like, that happens. Things are complicated and hard to be with because we're imperfect. So, yeah, I just wonder if there's anything, and if nothing comes to mind, that's okay, but like, what do you intuit might be beautiful about it? Possibly, yeah.
Well, I just think that there's beauty in the fulfillment of any relationship. So I have I adore this child beyond words. Right. And at the same time, she drives me nuts. Like, and so there's just this idea of how do I appreciate the adoration and the amazement that, you know, I have for her. Mm-hmm. While I'm grappling with this idea that I have no control and whatever I do is not going to matter.
It
probably every parent, you know, struggles with it, but I've had the ability to have a little hindsight and look back at days where I've just been so wrapped up in the emotion of the situation, and there could have been a milestone moment, but I wouldn't have noticed because I was just so angry, or, right, you know, whatever. And so it's brought forth a lot of sadness for things I have already missed or maybe viewed very negatively, mm-hmm, when in fact, that's just one part of that moment.
Right.
And so I don't want to continue this trend of.
Yeah. 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 Thanks. That helps. Yeah. I think what you were saying about the beauty is the connection and the love, and that's the basis. And I had an experience on a retreat a couple years ago. I was I had a partner at the time, and things were sort of complicated as they are. And on this retreat, you know, I've had the fortune to go on long retreats. And so, at a certain point, it just being with the thoughts and feelings around this relationship, there was an understanding that all of the negative stuff, all of the fear, attempts to control, insecurity, and then out of insecurity, attempts to control, we're actually coming out of this perception of a beautiful connection and some intuition that this was a valuable, beautiful, precious, tenuous thing. And somehow, then I had a lot more compassion and understanding for all of those unskillful and even harmful, you know, behaviors and attitudes, because, yeah, I just saw, oh, you're just trying to hold on to this beautiful thing because you're scared it's going to go away. And I see that a lot these days in other areas too. Like I'm a musician and I'm pursuing that a little bit more these days. And yeah, it's like I was talking to my sister about this. She's also an artist. Yeah, just like I can. She was saying like I just don't want to work on this thing, and I was saying yeah, sometimes I feel that way too. And then, but then when I check in, it's not that I don't want to do it. It's that I'm scared. And so just that, like, anything, any worthwhile endeavor is vulnerable. To put our hearts into anything is vulnerable. And that just, yeah, that just, when, because for me, I mean, we all have different personalities, but I tend to be a fear-based type. And so that just, like, it reorients it so that I'm seeing the love, like, you know, fear, the flip side is the wanting of love, the wanting of connection. So I'm not denying that there's fear, but I'm appreciating that it's coming because there's also this desire for love and connection, and it's appropriate that there would be fear because we are vulnerable and we are imperfect, and we, so that doesn't provide any, you know, solutions, but it, for me, it's just, it just normalizes it. I mean, that, you know, and then we can reorient, you know, well, we're still going to have unskillful or, you know, negative emotions and reactions because we're not fully enlightened and we've got these sensitive hearts and we get pushed around. But we're just kind of appreciating, we're reorienting around our good intentions. I mean, as simple as that is, that's kind of, it's kind of what we have. And we don't have a lot else in terms of control. So, yeah, part of what I think I also wanted to mention was just, yeah, that as a, like, we are going to miss moments. You know, we are going to be caught up. So, yeah, you know, less about being perfect. We're not going to be perfect. More about being perfectly real, you could say, or perfectly sensitive, perfectly, you know, we can have, in moments, we can have a perfectly real, open relationship with the messiness. And we can bring that into our relationships. And, you know, are we reflecting that same value of being real, being sensitive? And, you know, it depends in relationships and what's appropriate. But, like, you know, when it's appropriate to just be real, to express that, instead of all the ways we try to get things under control. They're not under control. We just have our hearts and our love and our best, and you know, and it's that it is, it's powerful. Like, we can have really powerful hearts. It doesn't mean we can control everything, but that's a real power, and it has real effects, and it's really cultivatable. It's something we can, and it's, the world and our relationships are constantly providing opportunities to practice that. So that's kind of the reorientation of, like, and part of, I think, what I think you already intuit is that this is a perfect place to develop, you know, beautiful qualities. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. So we've got a few more minutes if anyone else wants to share or seeming obstacles. Yeah.
My name is Jess. This is like kind of a more mundane question and just comment on a obstacle that I have a little bit when I'm just practicing sitting. So it's all, you know, it's all for the purpose of, and this gets a little bit to what John was saying too, I think it is all for the purpose of working on continuity of present moment awareness, but I kind of have an idea of things I would like to have be part of my sit, like do the hearing for a little while, work on my breath for a little while. I have this like kind of body scan, guided imagery that I really like to do. So, but then my thinking part is like, how am I going to fit these all in? And when should I switch from one to the other? And like, am I going to have enough time to get all the way through my body with my guided, you know, it's like the planning, thinking thing, even for those pieces of like the props that we use to get to present. And I, you know, I can get there when I'm doing that thing, but there's this like layer of kind of trying to manage the time that I have for sitting. Just curious, I'd run this by Mark at one point too. Just curious if you have an approach on that or thoughts on that question. Obstacle.
Do you have a sense of what the emotion is that's fueling that? I mean, it sounds like you have some sense that it may be unskillful in some way, but what's
your...
I think
there might be something of like that I need to do it the right way or, you know, like if I don't try out the hearing, I'm going to be missing some part of it.
Is it fear or is it greed, do you think, if you had to name it?
Maybe greed.
Wanting not to miss out, like FOMO, fear of missing out.
But maybe also fear of doing it wrong, you know?
Yeah, also fear of doing it wrong.
Probably both.
Yeah.
And probably some other unskillful things too.
And that's good to check out. Like in those moments, I mean, basically, I think the general approach is, the general instruction is just be interested in that process with mindful awareness and see, you know, when, don't assume that, I don't think we should assume we know what we're doing and that it's okay. Yeah, like there, we have these lists. Buddhism has a lot of lists, which can sort of make it seem like it's a linear, straightforward thing. But our hearts and minds aren't linear. So we're always experimenting. And we can experiment by just doing the same thing for a month or 2 months and try that and see what that's like to not have options and just like, well, this seems good enough and I'll just see what I can learn there. And then we get to learn about our restlessness and our fear of missing out and our fear of missing, you know, am I doing it right? Well, I'm just gonna do that. But there's no, there's no cut and dry. And so it can also be really interesting because there are different skillful means for different moments and different tools have different impacts. And so eventually we want to be a meditator with a lot of tools and have some intuition about what their effects are and when to apply them. And we only really learn that through trial and error. So I think the most important thing is just to include that whole process. It's not like you're going to figure it out. It's, you know, or it's not like there's a right way, basically. So just to bring interest to those decisions. I mean, I think this is actually one of the most interesting and sometimes overlooked parts of meditation, because sometimes we can just do meditation in a rote way and think, kind of magical thinking, oh, I've got this new thing, meditation, I just pay attention to my breath, I'll do it, you know, for 5 years or for how long, and then so we can, you know, bring our intelligence, remove our intelligence, our intuitive, embodied intelligence, and kind of give our autonomy over to some technique or some doing it right. So yeah, I would just be interested in, and then in those moments, not only be interested in the effects that it has and understanding something around that, but also interested in that moment, like you're starting your meditation, the mind picks up some some tool. Give yourself the opportunity to settle into that, obviously. You know, you want to start just, yeah, settling into that. And then when the intention arises, the thought arises to switch, then just see what is that. Is it coming from wisdom that this might be useful, or is it just restlessness, is it just wanting to try something different, is it fear that... So we want to, you know, as much, and we might not, you know, we might switch, and then we find we're just restless because we keep switching. So then we learn in hindsight, oh, that wasn't wisdom, probably, that was just restlessness. And then other times, you know, we're doing a practice, doing our best, really giving ourselves to it. And for instance, maybe being with the breath as best we can, but the mind's kind of dull, not really interested, not really connecting. And so then we practice in a more open, less directed way, kind of what is the mind really interested in this moment, and have a more spacious, maybe using hearing or having the eyes open, letting emotion move, and just like just being interested in what the mind's naturally interested in, but wanting to maintain present moment awareness with that. And then we find, oh, the mind just didn't want to be corralled. You know, it does want to be interested, but there was too much control in that previous way. So we'll learn, you know, and that's the important thing. Is that we'll learn. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. So we have to end here. Let's just take a minute or a few seconds, let go of the words, and take a few breaths together. Appreciating our commitment, our interest in being real, being awake, and recognizing that it's not just for ourselves. So we can appreciate that, appreciate our good intentions to show up in our lives in a way that's supportive, a way that's grounded and connected, kind. So may the benefit of our practice tonight be shared with our loved ones, with all beings everywhere. Thanks, everyone.
To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.